This morning we will take up case number 6 of the Mumonkan, Buddha holds up a flower. And the case reads, long ago, when the World Honoured One was at Vulture Peak to give a talk, he held up a flower before the assembly. All remained silent except the Venerable Kashyapa, who smiled. The World Honoured One said, I have the all-pervading, true Dharma eye, the marvellous mind of Nirvana, exquisite teaching of formless form, the subtle Dharma gate. It does not rely on words and is transmitted outside the scriptures. I now hand it on to Mahakasho. And the commentary, yellow-faced Gautama is certainly outrageous. He turns the noble into the lowly, sells dog flesh advertised as sheep's head. I thought there was something interesting in it. However, if everyone in the assembly had smiled, to whom would the true Dharma have been handed? Or again, if Kasho had not smiled, would the true Dharma have been transmitted? If you say that the true Dharma can be transmitted, the yellow-faced old man with his loud voice deceived the simple villagers. If you say it cannot be transmitted, then why was Kasho alone approved? A flower is held up, and the secret has been revealed. Kasho breaks into a smile, but monks do not know what to do. It seems appropriate to choose this particular koan as we're celebrating Buddha's awakening, because it is said, of course, that this incident signaled the beginning of Zen Buddhism, that this is the essence, in other words, of Zen Buddhist teaching. And it certainly is a magnificent koan. But before we go into discussing the koan itself, it might be interesting just to say what a few other people have said about flowers. For example, Dogen said, every country has the true flower, beautiful, undefiled truth. Every country has the true flower. And that is beautiful, undefiled truth. Even though this truth abounds with peace and tranquility, the ordinary person cannot understand it. Every country has the beautiful flower, beautiful truth. And he went on to say, he said, the true flower shows the truth simultaneously with the truth showing the true flower. The true flower shows the truth. And at the same time, the truth shows the true flower. How does truth show the true flower? What is this truth? What is this clarity? What is not the true flower? Is someone saying, oh, isn't this beautiful flower? That's not the true flower. Isn't it wonderful? This is not the true flower. And then there's this poem, or short poem, by Kabir. You know, Kabir was the Sufi poet. He lived actually in Afghanistan, or the part near Pakistan. It is a tragedy when one realizes this, that Afghanistan was the heart of some marvellous Sufi teaching, some marvellous wisdom came out of Afghanistan. It's quite likely that Gurdjieff got some of quite a lot of his teaching from Afghanistan, and it's being smashed to pieces, every bit of it. Anyway, Kabir says, do not go to the garden of flowers. Do not go to the garden of flowers. O friend, go not there. In your body is the garden of flowers. Take your seat on the thousand petals of the lotus and there gaze on the infinite beauty. In your body is the garden of flowers. Take your seat on the thousand petals of the lotus and there gaze on the infinite beauty. Anais Nin, you know, she was the great diarist, French diarist. And she wrote, there came a time when the risk to remain tight in the bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. This person often likens this sense of self to the bud of a flower. This is why we say we must not feel that we must destroy it or get rid of it or kill it or starve it to death or whatever. It's only a problem when it remains a bud. But without the bud, there is no flower. And as Anais Nin says, sometimes there comes a time when the risk to remain tight in the bud is more painful than the risk it takes to blossom. And the American poet William Carlos Williams says, it is at the edge of a petal that flower waits. It is at the edge of a petal. Whoops, no, I've got that wrong. Whoops. Sorry about that. Let me try that one again. It is at the edge of a petal that love waits. Oh dear, I ruined that one, didn't I? Never mind. There's another one. This is by Alice Walker, the novelist. If you pass by the colour of purple in a field and not notice it, God gets real pissed off. If you pass by the colour of purple in a field and not notice it, God gets really pissed off. And A.J. Balfour, the English essayist and poet, what a desolate place would be a world without a flower. It would be a face without a smile, a feast without a welcome. Are not flowers the stars of the earth? And are not our stars the flowers of the heaven? What a desolate place would be a world without flowers. It would be a face without a smile. That's interesting, in connection with our Cohen. And Ralph Waldo Emerson, of Walden fame. No, not Walden fame, he's the other one, isn't it? Which one? I've gotten screwed up. Emerson is the transcendentalist in them. Anyway, never mind. I'm not doing very well this morning. He says, anyway, the earth laughs in flowers. One like that. The earth laughs in flowers. Also connected with our Cohen. And Albert Schweitzer says, in the hope of reaching the moon, people fail to see the flowers that blossom at their feet. In the hope of reaching the moon, a lot of people come on the Sesshin and they have got this hope they're going to reach the moon, and you fail to see the flowers at your feet. And finally, there's a haiku from Issa, a haiku poet. In the cherry blossom's shade, there's no such thing as a stranger. So let's take a look at our koan. And to really get into this koan, as we say, if you're working on koans, you must get into the koan. It's like a little play, it's a little drama. And you have to be both the actor and the audience. You have to be in it, involved, part of it. Anyway, there is this village in India, and people are waiting to hear this great sage, Shakyamuni, the wise man of the Shakya tribe, give a talk. And you have to see the scene. There'll be people sitting around on blankets that have brought their picnics with them. There'll be children running around, excited, and dogs running around after them, even more excited, barking. There'll be children crying, and there'll be this general murmur of people talking in a kind of expectant way, because the great sage of the Shakya tribe is coming. And in those days, the arrival of a seer, or as one of these wandering monks or wise men, was always a great occasion. Not having TV and internet, not having newspapers, radio, they were out of touch with what goes on in the world. And these people came, sometimes teaching wisdom, but often just teaching or telling of their troubles and travels. There'll be con men and artists, storytellers, and occasionally a really wise person. And so therefore it was always an occasion for a day out to get together, to listen. And then you can see the sudden hush as Buddha and his disciples come into the scene. And Buddha would probably mount a chair that had been put there for him, raised up a little probably. There'd be flowers strewn around in a kind of offering. And the disciples would range themselves around behind him on his side, Kashyapa next to him. And everybody then waits to hear the great man speak. And instead of speaking, he raises a flower and just holds it there. Of course, all the audience was absolutely stunned that this is not what we came for. We came, no, we, if you got it wrong. We want to hear something. Oh, oi. And he holds the flower. And Mahakashyapa smiles. Now, what about this? What's going on here? What's Buddha doing, holding up a flower? And don't be too hasty with this. Be careful. Don't rush into this. All currents take you to the transcendent. Take them, take you home to yourself. And you have to ask yourself, how is that possible here? And so, for the time being, you have to be Buddha holding up the flower. How would you do that? Would you sort of show it to people? Look, look, flower. See the flower? Would that be what you do? Would you hold it right up above your head? Or just by your side? Would you hold it in front of you? How long would you hold it there? And what is it you're holding up anyway? Is it a flower that you're holding up? Supposing it was any old person holding up the flower. Would that be different to what Buddha's doing? Could there be a difference in any way? Or would it be just exactly the same idea? But even more, what is Kashyapa smiling at? What's he got to smile at? What's so funny? And these are the two aspects of this koan that you have to deal with. You have to be Buddha holding up the flower, and you have to be Kashyapa smiling. What is in a smile? You know, Shakespeare said through Hamlet, a man can smile, 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 and still be a damn villain. But then there's a smile of the lover. Are they the same? You've probably been at the airport sometime waiting to receive a visitor, and perhaps you've noticed there may have been a young man pacing up and down, a frown on his face, obviously impatient. And every time the door opens, letting out new arrivals, he looks up, expectant, and then that kind of frown comes back on his face, his head drops a bit, and he walks around a bit more, quite lost. More visitors, up again, no. And then all of a sudden the door opens and there's this great smile comes on his face, and he rushes forward, he's got his arms out, and there's this woman comes through and they embrace, both smiling. What is the smile there? What is the difference between the smile and the embrace? Or what is the connection between the two? Is there any connection? Or are they just happen to be things done at the same time? So it's Christmas, and under the Christmas tree there are all these toys and parcels and presents. And then are opened, and the little girl gets a doll, and she grasps this doll, and she's smiling and laughing. What's going on here? What is this smile? Why do we smile? Because there's another smile. As some children have been given a problem to study, there they are sitting there in a row, they've got to solve this problem. They're chewing their pencils, looking at one another out the corner of their eye, scratching their heads, shifting. And all of a sudden, one of them smiles, and you know, she's got the answer. Is that the same smile as the lover? The same smile as the damn villain? It's interesting that the medical profession is beginning to take note of the therapeutic value of the smile. And also its cousin, therapeutic value of laughter. There are actually studies now being done on this very thing, and they find that the laughter releases all kinds of beneficial results in the body, including an increase in the immune system. I saw a YouTube video of two doctors dressed up as clowns going round making patients laugh. And of course, there was that famous story of Norman Cousins. He was a Saturday Night Post. Anyway, he was an editor of some magazine or other. And he was told that he had this incurable disease. And it was terminal. And so he went off and he got all of the books and films. They didn't have videos in those days. It was ordinary reel-to-reel films that were funny. And for 3 months, he just submerged himself in humour. And in fact, he no longer had the incurable disease. Why is it that comedians are so highly paid? You know, Bob Hope and what was his name, the other guy, George Burns? Why is it they were so high? And the other guy, Bob Cosby? Bill Cosby, thanks. Yeah, they get an enormous amount of money. Then what is also interesting is George Burns and Bob Hope lived to over 100. I wonder if there's any connection here. So what is this then? There's something in laughter, in the smile, that is more than just a grimace of the face. The one that smiles, the second-hand salesman, second-hand car salesman, you know, he always comes with a smile. But that would cure nothing. It'd probably make the plants wither. There is some connection here. So let's have another look at the lover meeting the beloved and the embrace. It seems somehow that they're coming together. There's a union. They become one at that moment. There is not two. They're just one at that moment. They're completely transported at the moment. And the smile is a manifestation of that unity. If one smiles, another person invariably smiles with you. But not only that, if you smile, there's somehow resistance, separation is broken down. We sometimes take on the project of making at least one person smile in the day. In fact, we worked for some time at the checkout counter in the metro until we got all of them, believe it or not, sooner or later, we got all of them to smile. It was hard work with one or two of them, but we made it. And there's one in the Jean Coutu post office. She was a real challenge. But there was the day when she actually smiled, and it was just like heaven. When she smiled, she was beautiful. Have you noticed that? That the smiling person is always beautiful. There's nothing so beautiful as a beautiful smiling woman. That was made by God himself. So we've got coming together, we've got unity. Somehow there is something, there's a unifying element here. And what is health? Health and whole and holy all have the same etymology. So in other words, as you become one with the world, so you become healthy. And by smiling, by allowing this unity to shine out, there is a healing process going on. But then there's this other smile of the young child, the young girl, who smiles because she solved the problem. This is also expression of unity. You see, when one has a problem, there are a lot of what you might call random elements that won't fit together. And when you solve the problem, those elements are unified in a harmonious whole. And so when that occurs, the person smiles. We used to give talks when we were in the management field, and we wanted to explain or show people what we meant by an idea. And we had a picture, you may have seen it if you've seen Zen and Creative Management, or the other one, Conflict and Creativity. It's a man, a hidden man. It's a sort of just a random set of black and white shapes. But if you look at it, after a while, it turns into a perfect picture of a man's face, the lower half of a man's face. It looks like Jesus Christ. We used to give this in order to show people what we meant by an idea. And what do you know? Invariably, when they saw it, everybody smiled. So again, we've got unity and the smile. So what's that got to do with our Cohen? What did Buddha hold up when he held up the flower? Did he hold up the universe? As we say, the only way in which you can really work with any kind of koan is to be the protagonist in that koan. There's another koan in which Gute holds up a finger. With no matter what anybody would ask Gute, he would always hold up the same finger. What was he doing? And was that finger any different to Buddha's flower? And if it was the same, in what way was it the same? You see, Gute had an assistant, a young acolyte, who used to imitate Gute. And visitors used to come and ask the acolyte a question, and the acolyte would also hold up the same finger as Gute had held up. And then Gute heard about this, and he was rather incensed, and he got hold of the boy and cut off his finger. And then as the boy ran around away screaming, Gute called him and said, "Now what is it?" And the boy came to awakening. Why did he come to awakening? What did he see? So we have this situation in which everyone is expecting to hear some talk. Buddha holds up a flower and Mahakashyapa smiles. How do you see that? It's interesting because I said that there was Mahakashyapa's face lit up with a smile. It's interesting, this word lit up, because light and the smile very often go together. We say her face was beaming with a smile. Beaming, a word that, of course, light beams. You get a beam of light, very closely associated. His face lit up with a smile. Her eyes sparkled as she smiled. He has a brilliant smile. She has a sunny smile. And his face shone as he smiled. What is the connection with light and without koan? You probably know, of course, that light and spirit are very closely associated. We often say, you are the light of the world. And of course, it's not a light that you can see any more than when his face is lit up. There's a kind of light that sort of comes out of his face. You are the light of the world. An awakened person in the Sufi tradition is called photos, which means light. In fact, there's a book written by Henry Kaufman called The Man of Light in Iranian Sufism. Fascinating book. And then, of course, it is said that Christ, when he resurrected, was resurrected in a body of light. And there's a book on that, of course, it's called the Pistis Sophia, which is full of light. It drips with light. But then there's this fascinating passage in Exodus Moses goes up Mount Sinai and sees God and talks with God. And when he came down, it says, Moses wist not. That means he didn't know. Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone by reason of his talking to God. And when Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near to him. Moses didn't know the skin of his face was shining because he'd been talking to God. And when the Israelites saw him, they saw his face was shining and they were afraid. And later on, just another part of the same chapter, it also says again, this will be the third time it said this, and the children of Israel saw that the skin of the face of Moses and it shone. So we've now got Moses talking to God. We've got the face lit up with a smile. And we've got the smile expressing unity. What did Moses see when he... What's this business of him talking to God? Do you think there was an old man sitting on top of the mountain there with a beard and two great big lumps of stone that's got these Ten Commandments written on it? No. God of the Israelites is the unity of Buddhism. God is that unifying truth, the unifying beauty of the world, the unifying beauty of the smile. And it's interesting, we trust a smiling person. We believe that that person is truthful. We give this, we used to, when one time we used to actually run the beginner's course, but we became so used to giving it that we couldn't resist sort of exploring interesting ideas when we were talking to the people, the beginners, and they became more and more mystified by what I was talking about. So eventually I gave it up because I was doing such a terrible job and asked Roger to take over. But when I did that, and I'm not sure he may even still do it, I used to tell this story, and I used to suggest to people that they spend the week with a smile on their face and take note of what went on both inside themselves and in their relation with others. And I would suggest this is something that you could do yourself periodically. One of the things that you'll find is that it's much easier to remember yourself if you smile. The other thing, of course, is that you'll find that a lot of the barriers that you've been carrying around will loosen. You may have noticed that we changed the Buddha, and it was with some reluctance that we did this, because the Buddha that we had, the metal Buddha that we had, it was a Chinese Buddha. It's a beautiful Buddha. It's a very powerful Buddha. It's a very dynamic Buddha. But we sacrificed him in favor of another Buddha that we found in a curio shop along St. Hubert Street. It was on sale. Quite cheap. But the reason we bought him was not only because it was cheap, but because he's got this beautiful smile on his face. Next time you come to the Zendo of an evening, if you see him, or he's in room number one at the moment, you take a look. And you will see many of the Bodhisattvas have also got smiles on their face. And again, you'll find that when you get in deep in Zazen, the smile will become naturally. And furthermore, if you'll allow yourself to smile, it'll help you get much deeper into Zazen. It's not, of course, if you're going to do this, that I suggest, wear a smile on your lips. We're not talking about Pepsodent smiles. We're not talking about the smiles that everybody seems to have on the commercials because life is so terrific for them. It's not all teeth and gums. It's just a bit. Other people may not even notice that there is a smile there. It's just a movement up of the mouth. But if you do this, after a while, you will find that the smile will radiate much deeper. And if you can, of course, let your heart smile. The other thing this person has noticed in his life, and that is that even in times of extreme difficulty, pain, if one can let the pain smile, it does release it. It's not a cure, it won't get rid of it, it's not like Tylenol. It will release it. And if you're standing in the queue and there's this old woman dipping her fingers into this purse and not being able to get the pennies out, and you're in a hurry, instead of chomping around at the bit there, let the impatient smile. A governor asked Master Ongo, "It is said that the world honoured one gave a secret talk of holding up a flower, and Kasho, by smiling, did not conceal it. What does this mean? What does it mean that Kashyapa did not conceal the talk, the secret of the talk? What was the secret talk?" And Ongo called out, "O governor!" "Yes, master," replied the governor. "Do you understand?" asked Ongo. "Understand what?" What was Ongo showing the governor by calling out like that? When the governor replied, no, I don't," Ongo told him, "If you do not understand, it shows that the world honoured one did make the secret talk. If you do understand, it means that Kasho did not conceal it. If I called out your name, hello, do you understand? In that case, Buddha gave a secret talk. You do understand? In that case, it's all wide open." As Mobon says, a flower is held up and the secret has been revealed. When Kashyapa smiled, the whole world smiled, because the whole world at that moment was a flower.
les quatre vœux.
Tous les êtres innombrables,
je fais vœu de libérer les passions aveuglées sans fin. Je fais vœu de vaincre les barrières infinies du Dharma. Je fais vœu de franchir la grande voie du Bouddha. Je fais vœu de l'atteindre. Tous les êtres innombrables, je fais vœu de libérer les passions aveuglées sans fin. Je fais vœu de vaincre les barrières infinies du Dharma. Je fais vœu de franchir la grande voie du Bouddha. Je fais vœu de l'atteindre. Tous les êtres innombrables, je fais vœu de libérer les passions aveuglées sans fin. Je fais vœu de vaincre les barrières infinies du Dharma. Je fais vœu de franchir la grande voie du Bouddha. Je fais vœu de l'atteindre.